Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Real Spoilers, powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real Spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 579, as we continue our series in Misbegotten sequels and their typically better counterparts.
Is this Misbegotten, though?
Well, from a box office standpoint, it certainly
was.
That's
fair. Okay.
But right now, we're tackling the source material, which is Gremlins.
Yeah. Got to give them a reason to listen, Joe. We can't spoil it now.
That's not really spoiling it as much, I guess.
I mean, all of them.
It's in the title,
around...
Kevin.
Yeah. No, I think he means whether or not the sequel is Misbegotten.
Oh, yeah. I see.
That's not part of this episode.
I guess let's go around the virtual table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. Quick shameless plugs. Don't forget, we're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you can get podcasts, you can find us. And of course, while you're there, be sure and subscribe so you never miss an episode, and leave a review if you're so inclined. That's always helpful.
It's pretty impressive. We're actually on Spotify like Joe Rogan, so it's pretty elite place to
be. And he's just making I'd say about $100 million more than we are.
Well, I was thinking it was more like $101 million, but...
Yeah.
We're in the negative. Like, that's how...
Oh, boy.
We're not in the negative a million. We better not be.
That's true. That's true.
I don't like this that much.
You got to turn this in now.
Right. And then also, you can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/realspoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group. Group's a great place for conversation, chiming in on things you hear on an episode. If you want to have a counterpoint, if you like something we didn't or vice versa, well, we love to hear from you as long as you're not too terribly douchey about
it. That's on the other one. That's on the page. That's not the group.
And then what else? Oh, yeah. You can also become join the League of Show Sharers by sharing an episode. People who were kind enough to share an episode this week: Ralph Tribble, Gabriel Lugo, Travis Tewitt, Griffin Fox Smith, Brent Smith, no relation, Ron Johnson, Chris Sanders, Chris Williams, again, no relations, Heather Sachs, Tammy Sherman Powers, Aaron Marlowe, Lane LeVanway, Carl Clarkson, Julianne Jordan, Chris Magic Man, and Colby Mack. So thank you very much, guys, for sharing the episode. We really appreciate it. And, of course, our Patreon, patreon.com/realspoilers, where for $5 you get bonus content and you help us out, and we like you a little bit extra. So there's all that, I guess. Gremlins.
Well, I think Joe has a little bit of WB-related news.
I feel like, so HBO Max kicked off, right? Did everybody check it out?
Yeah,
a little bit.
Yeah, it was all right. It's a little wonky day, like week one, which I can accept.
It's pretty much it's pretty much the exact same thing as HBO Go Purple. The app on the TV is the exact same interface, like when you play and like the titles and like everything about it, the way that it works, except for it's like purple colors on it.
Yeah, it's an interesting choice. I don't like it.
You don't like purple?
I don't like the color.
I think they're probably I think they're trying to find a color that differentiates them. So like Netflix has already taken red, Hulu kind of has a green.
Sure.
And I think they want a color that says this is our color.
Definitely.
And obviously
they got it.
there aren't a finite amount of colors technically,
but yeah. So I think the coming out this week is that Henry Cavill is back. Like that he's signed to, well, he hasn't signed. I don't know if he's signed
yet.
Yeah,
I think it's in discussions. He's
in the process of maybe coming not as a in a Man of Steel sequel.
So they're just never going to do a Man of Steel sequel. They still have not. And now they're just like, yeah, you can show up in other people's movies.
Yeah, you can. It's like, from what I've understood, it's a 3-appearance deal. So to me, that says Shazam, Wonder Woman, Black Adam.
Well, I mean, Wonder Woman is pretty much done.
I guess that's true.
I don't know yeah.
I just don't know.
They've never re-edited one of these movies.
But I think that's kind of cool. Like we've always said is that he was never the problem.
No.
He deserved a better shot. There are scenes in Justice League where he is given an opportunity to smile and not be mopey. I mean, you know, that when he shows up to fight Steppenwolf.
Oh, I don't remember that movie at all. I saw it once.
Which is fine. Like, there's that scene where, or actually, it's more the scene with Alfred when he shows up at to talk to Alfred is a very good scene between the two. And then the last scene with the Flash where he's able to smile a little bit. I get it.
Here's my question. You know how, if you're like a baseball player, right? They have things in their contracts like, you know, you're not allowed to change your own tire or you can't ride a motorcycle.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because you're too valuable, you know, right. The same way like surgeons won't change their own tires. Right. You got to protect your hands, you know, no cutting your own grapefruit, things like that. Do you think in Henry Cavill's contract, they have forbidden him from ever again growing a mustache?
Yes.
Yeah, this time around, if they rehire him, there's no way he's allowed to grow a mustache.
Three picture deal. If you grow a mustache, null and void.
Null and void.
Can we talk about how insane it is that that became a thing? Like now that we've had a little bit of distance, the mustache, like the fact that that was like a major news item and a bone of contention. And I'm not saying it was not bad, but I'm saying like that was something that got tons of press, tons of articles, tons of like a mustache. To me, looking back, we live in a world where like that was a big deal, and that seems crazy.
I'll go back to that world any day of the week.
Right? Did you remember when the internet was complaining about an actor having a mustache in a movie that they had to digitally remove? Oh my god, that sounds like heaven.
And they did it so poorly.
Yeah, they did.
Oh.
That was the other problem is that he had a very weird upper lip that they couldn't figure out what to do with. But yeah, like I said, I'm happy the guy gets another shot. Hopefully he gets to be the character. I mean, looks, I've said from Jump Street, he looks like he came out of a comic book.
You know what the only problem I have is? I like Henry Cavill as Superman. I like the movie Man of Steel. I always have. I've never changed my opinion on that. But this universe is so messed up.
Mm-hmm.
When they talk about bringing people back, like Affleck, I mean, unless something changes, but as far as we know, Affleck is out as Batman. And then
I don't think he'll come back. I don't think he ever will.
Yes, because he had such a terrible time. I agree. But so, but as far as we know, I mean, things can change. But he's out as Batman. And then we had Superman stuff where Cavill was supposedly out, and it's been several years, and they couldn't get him for Shazam and all this stuff, whatever. And then if they bring him back, you're just murking the waters between what are we doing? Because now we have Robert Pattinson Batman, but then we have that Superman from those movies still exists, which means that Batman still exists.
What I would do is I would go forward with that Flashpoint movie.
Yes, you have.
As much as I hate Flashpoint with a vengeance, it is kind of their only option if they want to write this ship.
Yes, bring in a different
Flashpoint. You do Flashpoint. You reset the Flash goes back and messes something up or fixes something.
Can we get not Ezra Miller though?
I would love to.
Please? Like
I would love for that
because
to happen.
Now we know because I finally watched Crisis on Infinite Earths. Thank you very much. So
how did you like it?
Yeah. Well, I mean
yeah. It was fun.
For those shows, yes. It was cool. But now we know that they can exist in the same medium. Please bring in Grant Gustin as the Flash. That everyone loves him as the Flash. Like
you can, so you have Barry Allen go back fix something, mess something up, mm-hmm. and it resets your entire universe. So now you can bring in Robert Pattinson, you can bring in Henry Cavill, you can bring in Gal Gadot and Jason Momoa. And I mean, you don't really have to explain why Batman is all of a sudden 3 inches shorter and about 200 pounds lighter.
Exactly. Don't just recast it. I mean, he's from a different Earth. Just, like, that's...
Well, not even different Earth. Like, because the Flash goes back in time, he resets the timeline.
You're saying same Earth, but just changed.
Yeah, same Earth. Oh, he just resets the timeline.
Interesting.
For whatever reason.
Okay. I mean, I think that's a little more difficult. I mean, you're just changing so much. But I mean, yeah, you're right. It could happen.
All the concern about your internet, and he's the one who freezes up. You froze up. We lost
you
all
froze
that.
Up, Kevin. We don't know what you said.
Oh, it doesn't matter.
All right.
that's a like great message to send to the listeners.
Kind of their only option.
I just, you know, it gets so murky. Like, if it's the same Earth, like, I like the idea. If you watch the Crisis on Infinite Earths, what I like about that is that they chose to show Earths that are so different, and therefore things were, mm-hmm. you know, had changed drastically. And okay, you accept that because it's a completely different Earth. And while some things are similar, some things are very different. And so if they just reset the timeline and all of a sudden you're saying he's still Bruce Wayne on that same Earth, but he looks completely different, like, I don't buy that as much as it's Bruce Wayne from Earth 2. Do you know what I mean? Like,
sure.
I don't see how the Flash going and stepping on a butterfly would make Bruce Wayne turn from Ben Affleck to Robert Pattinson. Like, that to me, I don't buy as much as bringing
Flash. The Flash sneezes into the mouth of a Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Yeah,
and kills all the dinosaurs.
So
yeah. Honestly, though, all it would take is for his parents to copulate 2 or 3 seconds in a different direction either way, and it could theoretically be a totally different person.
Right, right.
Yeah.
But did you see that show Hollywood on Netflix?
No.
That the dude on that show looks like if they were to recast it, that's the dude they should recast. Huh. Like, he looks like a much younger. He's a weird hybrid of Christopher Reeve and Henry Cavill.
Oh, interesting.
Like, if you look at him, go watch that show, at least the first episode, to see what I'm talking about. But he looks like this weird hybrid of both of those guys. And I feel like if they want to go younger, I mean, Cavill's 37. Not saying that's old. It's very young, by the way. Robert Pattinson is in his early 30s, I think.
Which actor is it that you're talking about? Do you know the guy's name?
I don't. He's the main guy, I think.
Okay, I'm looking at a picture of like the main actors, and I kind of could see what you're saying about these two main actors that are next to one another. So I'm like, which one?
There's one.
Robert Pattinson is 34.
Okay, I mean, so that age gap is not in movie time is not that big a deal, you know?
No.
Let's see here, Hollywood. David Corn and Sweat, not Darren Criss.
Okay. Well, no, Darren Criss is the guy from Glee, right?
Darren Criss is also the voice of Superman in the new DC animated movie.
Ah.
Okay, I could see it.
He's like he does a lot of business on Broadway. Wasn't he like in Kinky Boots? And yeah, I think so.
There we go. So yeah, I just thought that was interesting that Cavill is apparently back in some form or another.
Yeah, we'll see. I really was hoping that they would. I mean, I know they're talking about sticking to solo movies, which would be a smart move, but it's so murky with the fact that it's already a part of this this failed universe.
Yeah.
And you kind of just hope that they'll do it right, you know, restart it so that there's none of the leftover stuff. But right now it is so messy with, you know,
I mean, when you're going forward with Wonder Woman, you've got an Aquaman sequel coming, right. You know, you've got all this different, they screwed the pooch early and they have not stopped.
And it sucks so bad because it's like none of us want DC to fail. I mean, I've always been a DC guy as far as comics mm-hmm. and the characters go. So it's so frustrating as a fan to have to keep wading through these murky waters, and you just hope that they'll eventually get this thing right.
Maybe. Speaking of murky waters, Ryan Gosling is the Wolfman. You see that?
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, why not? Yeah. The Dark Universe. Speaking of failed universes.
Is this a Blumhouse thing?
Is the Blumhouse thing.
Well,
yeah.
Then, yeah, we're good.
Yeah.
Good to go.
I just thought that was cool. Do it.
So I guess enough of that. Let's talk Gremlins, shall we?
Man, I love this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Like, It's funny to watch it with now that I've seen a lot. I watch it with a different eye. Is you can see there's a lot of Joe Dante here, mm-hmm. but like the whole beginning of this movie is a Spielberg movie, and then as soon as the Mowgli. Gremlins show up, Mowgli, sorry,
Mogwai,
Gizmo. As soon as Gizmo, the Gremlins show up, it turns into a Joe Dante movie.
Yeah,
which I thought was insanely. I'd never noticed it until this last viewing.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. Like the movie before it turns bad at like, I don't know, what is it? Like 20 something minutes. The other Gremlins show up.
It's like an hour and a half movie, but the Gremlins show up quick.
Yeah. I mean, it's
yeah.
Like,
they
it's
don't waste any time getting to it. I mean, you're getting your Gremlin in essentially the opening scene. I mean, you don't really see him till the second one, but still, I mean, I was kind of like, boy, I feel like today, if they made this movie, there'd be 30 minutes of just complete BS.
We'd have a whole history of the
Mogwais. We'd get an origin story, and yeah, totally. And it's like, and instead, they're just like, here's a guy walking into a shop with, I mean, now,
totally.
Now you can argue that, you know, maybe it's a tad racially insensitive by today's standards.
I don't know. Is it?
I mean, it does play into that whole mystical Asian stereotype. I mean, this guy's right out of Central Casting with the Fu Manchu mustache and the
that dude. Isn't he like a big time bit actor though? Am I wrong?
Mm-hmm.
The guy that plays that guy, like, isn't that the guy from? Oh man, I could have sworn he was in something else.
He probably is. I mean, most there weren't a lot of Asian actors that broke through, but the ones that got any amount of work tended to get kind of all of the work.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not super familiar with him. Like a Pat Morita, you would know from a ton of different stuff. And James Hong, you would know from a ton of different stuff. Like this guy, I wasn't super familiar with his filmography.
Oh, you know what? He's in a Friday the 13th movie. That's what it is. Wow. That's where I recognize him from.
He's an all-star.
Yeah, right.
But I mean, he's been around since he's probably not around anymore, but he's been around since he was acting in the 30s. He was in a lot of Charlie Chan movies, which obviously did not age well. Mm-hmm. I think it says he played Lee Chan. I think that was Charlie Chan's son.
Really?
Yeah, there was an ongoing thing of like, my number one favorite son, I will not attempt to do the voice. But he played that character a lot.
Well,
I mean,
Joe was 100% correct, even if he didn't know it. 225 credits on IMDb, so the dude was legit.
I saw him in something.
I think we all have in a lot of things and didn't realize it. But it's weird how, like, I don't know, to me at least, he doesn't go to the levels of those other actors who are iconic, the other, you know, Asian actors that you can say, oh yeah, he's in this and that. And but I mean, yeah, this guy was a working actor for, I mean, his first credit was in 1934, like Tom said, and it's like his last credit goes to 1990 with 225 roles.
Yeah,
so
you know, when you have that, you can be a working actor like that, you know.
Yeah.
It's like I don't think I ever saw this. I was two when this came out, so I definitely did not see this in theaters.
Yeah,
but I honestly don't remember my first interaction with this movie, but I feel like this movie became like this weird pop culture sensation, like with Gizmo and like the, when you get to part two, they start saying things. I was like, I do remember all of that, like franchised and parceled out Gizmo stuff.
Hmm.
Oh yeah. And like, you know how, like, you know, you had Garfields with suction cups on the back of car windows. I mean, you had Gizmos that were on there. I mean, it's a Spielberg movie. They certainly merchandise the crap out of it, which is also kind of weird given like how dark the movie got. But
yeah.
Spielberg actually like made them kind of reshoot part of the movie, because originally Gizmo and Stripe were the same character. Gizmo turns into Stripe, which is why Gizmo disappears for a good chunk of the final act of the film. And then Spielberg was like, but kids are going to think Gizmo's cute, and if you turn him into the villain, now what do you got? So instead, they came up with this premise where, you know, Stripe is one of the other, you know, evil gremlins, and he's the good one. And not to spoil it, but the kid that plays Billy, they originally filmed it where he opens the blinds at the end and kills all the gremlins, and he didn't know until he saw the film that they changed that to Gizmo opening the blinds, and he was just like, oh, I was going to be the hero of this film, and now apparently I'm Gizmo's sidekick.
He is kind of the hero.
I mean, he's a human hero. He's the human protagonist, but like he was supposed to be the guy that rides in and saves the day, and instead he's playing second fiddle to a stuffed animal.
You know what's crazy is how a one small decision like that, one little tiny decision to change Gizmo to the hero, to have him not turn to be the villain, I think completely changed this franchise. Like, if I think this would be just another schlocky horror movie that is not beloved if Gizmo was not a cute, good gremlin. I mean,
I think if I agree, and I think that if Gizmo wasn't like a good guy, I think this movie fails, because I think that it's not enough of a horror movie to appease horror fans.
I think it would see that that's where I disagree. I think that it would have been if they stuck to the original idea.
Well, yeah, but they didn't. Like, but they didn't. Originally the kills were a lot more gruesome, and but like, and so like, if they hadn't, if they had made essentially the same movie with the same kind of kills, and I mean, yeah, there are some pretty extreme stuff, especially for the time frame, but if we had gotten this basically this kind of same movie, but Gizmo turns into Stripe, I think the horror fans would have been, it's not horrific enough, and obviously the family fans would have bailed, and instead they threaded this needle. You know, I remember seeing Gremlins originally. I mean, I saw it in the theater because I'm 100 years old, and I didn't really particularly care for it all that much. I didn't like the tonal shift, and like, it's easier to enjoy now as an adult, like knowing the shift that it's going to take. Mm. But it's still kind of is, to me, is always,
it's a hard turn.
Yeah,
it's not like a gradual turn. It's like, oh, we're going left now.
Right, especially because they set it up as a Spielberg style movie, right? Like, it's
big time.
I mean, it's set in Knott Hill Valley, and I mean, it's literally the same set, and I don't mean to say that the movie looks fake, but like you can tell you're on a set. Mm-hmm. You're not really in a town. Like, this is all Hollywood magic, which I think is good. Like, I think if it had a more grounded look, it wouldn't work because it's too ridiculous.
Sure.
You need that kind of movie magic cocoon that it offers. But yeah, I think that, you know, it's definitely, it's a pretty major head fake, again, especially for the time that Spielberg, I mean, keep in mind, this movie came out in, what, 84? So yeah. Spielberg at that time was just synonymous with, I mean, you're going to get E.T. and Close Encounters and these cute, inspirational kind of movies, and then they're
Poltergeist, and you get this, and it's
you're putting creatures in blenders.
Well,
you know?
Well, so look at it this way. So again, I think Spielberg saved this movie. I mean, I know he was, you know, in it from the inception, but I mean, for making Joe Dante rein it in by giving him his style and sensibilities, but making him give it the PG cut by adding those Spielberg elements that we can identify, this movie was a huge box office success. I mean, it made $153.1 million domestic. And so when you go to a movie, if it were a hard R, and if they were to have lost all the family appeal to it, look at a movie like Child's Play in 1988 that made $33 million domestic. Like,
yeah, I don't disagree.
Oh, I have no idea. The point is, though, that like, this would have just been another, I mean, horror fans may love it. It may have great practical effects still, but it would just fall into that, oh, it's that gross rated R horror movie. And, you know, now,
can I offer you another piece of data that will back up your point?
Yeah.
I know I don't do that often.
Sure.
to show you how much money this movie made, like, just in comparison, like, how well this movie did, just a little piece of movie news trivia. Gremlins opened the same day as Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
Wow.
Crazy.
Yeah. So the fact that it could still do that kind of box office, you know, going head to head with, you know, I'd have to look at a list, but I mean, is there a better movie in 1984 than Ghostbusters?
Right.
Probably not.
Yeah, if Gremlins
whatever won Best Picture, I don't know.
Think about it. If Gremlins was rated R, I mean, there'd be no way. Like, there'd be no way
to get swallowed up. Yeah, for sure.
So it was a smart move for sure. I mean, the way that everything worked out, and I think it was a win-win situation because again, Spielberg gave Joe Dante a lot of creative control. He let him make his movie, but you know, he did, you know, make that stipulation that he had to rein it in and they had to cut it down to PG at the time because there was no PG-13 yet. Spielberg would see to that very shortly here. And, you know, and I think it was just like that perfect mashup. Now, I agree there is a tonal shift, like you guys said, but I don't know. I've always really liked it. I've always liked that feel where it comes in as that Spielberg kind of a feel and then
sure,
it goes off the rails because, I mean, as a first-time viewer, not that I was this time, but when you are watching it for the first time, you don't know what to expect. And when it does that, I think it hits you in a certain way where you're feeling like Billy, because Billy didn't know what to expect either. He thought he had a
right,
cute new pet that, you know, might become America's next great pet, like the dog or whatever his dad says. And then he's hit with these insane gremlins that are going around murdering people. So yeah, I always liked the feel of it, and the tonal shift never was jarring as much as to me, like it brought you along for the ride.
I will also say though, is that I'm the only one of the three who watched it like going in completely blank, right? Like,
probably,
you know, I mean, I saw it, I don't think I saw it opening weekend necessarily, but I probably saw it in the first 2 or 3 weeks. So like, you know, you guys had some idea of what you were getting into where, I was just going to see the new Spielberg movie.
I mean,
you know?
When I saw it on VHS as a kid, I didn't know anything about it, though, to the same effect.
I mean, I don't know. I just feel like Gremlins has permeated the pop culture in such a way that you probably had some clue.
Not when I was a kid. I mean, I watched it on VHS from the rental store. Like, there was no internet. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, I had no exposure to it when I saw it the first time as a kid.
Yeah, I don't
that's the thing is, like, I honestly don't remember. I feel like I may have seen it on VHS, or maybe, you know, we've talked about those Saturday afternoon movies. Like, it was one of those, but I feel like I definitely had like a book, like it wasn't a comic book, but they had like a book that like did the movie for kids.
Do you have the record?
I think
so. I've got the record. I've got the vinyl record storybook that you play and you read along with.
I remember the cover was Billy with Gizmo in a backpack.
Okay.
Billy's like looking over his shoulder at Gizmo.
And here, Kevin, going in from a blank slate standpoint, the original poster for Gremlins,
yeah,
right, is a close-up of what I'm assuming is Billy. You don't see his face, mm-hmm, right? And he's holding a box.
Yeah.
And the lid is, it's got air holes, and the lid is open. And you see two cute little Gizmo hands poking out.
Yeah.
And it says, cute, clever, mischievous, intelligent, dangerous. Like, that's all it says, right?
Yeah.
That's what you got. The VHX box cover for Gremlins is that exact same pose, except now it's Stripe.
Yeah.
Busting out of that box, and it says, we're here, and it says, cute, clever, mischievous, intelligent, and Stripe is holding a crayon, and it's all that's crossed out. So I don't think you were quite the blank slate that you're remembering.
Yeah, that could be very true.
Yeah. It's interesting when we get to the poster for part two.
You didn't watch a trailer, though? I mean, didn't you watch movie trailers?
I'm trying to remember how much they really showed you in the original trailer.
I'm sure but to that same point, if you're going to say it was on the VHS cover, I guarantee they probably showed you a gremlin in the trailer.
Maybe.
I honestly don't remember.
Yeah, I'm just saying, I doubt that we both had that dissimilar of a situation. If I had seen it for the first time when I was 30, I would 100% agree with you and go, yes, I know what a gremlin is, and in pop culture, I've seen them on E!, I've seen them on pop-up video. You know what I mean? Like, I totally get it, but I just, but either way, it's just I appreciate it. But regardless of our exposure before we saw it, like, you know, that shift may just not work for people. So I totally understand if the jarring nature of that shift does bother you, because it is jarring for sure.
Oh yeah, big time. And it's like I said, it's not a gradual like sense of dread that you kind of get like with Jaws, right? Like you kind, or even Poltergeist to a certain extent, where like you can tell that something is coming. Like as soon as,
well, when they multiply, it's happy still. That's what the fun, that's what the interesting thing part of this is that in the beginning of the movie, whenever the, you know, when the guy that owns the shop, his grandson, sells Gizmo behind his back to Billy's dad, he gives him the rules, you know, and he said, right. And of course the rules are that they're allergic to light and sunlight will kill them. You can't get them wet. And the most important rule is do not feed them after midnight. So they set you up with these three ominous rules. And then 20 something minutes in, again, it's really early. Corey Feldman and Billy are hanging out in the room and he knocks over the glass of water at his drawing desk and it goes on to Gizmo. And so he starts replicating and, you know, it's this really crazy effect where, you know, they used balloons and they like puffed up these cocoon ball things. And
it was, I gotta tell you, the effects in this for 1984 are next level.
The effects in both movies are great. So
there's some
wonky green screen stuff in two.
Okay,
yes,
and I just real quick, I have the trailer for the original trailer for Gremlins playing, and I don't even know if I saw the trailer. I might have only seen TV spots, but there is no direct image of a gremlin in the trailer.
Really?
You don't even get a shot of Gizmo in the trailer.
They tease
the
entire thing's
a
teaser?
You see a hand coming up and taking the apple off the desk, and then at the last shot is you see the tops of a bunch of gremlin heads at the bottom of the screen, like chasing something. But like there is no direct shot of the gremlin. So there's no gremlin, you know, whether it's Gizmo or Stripe on the poster.
Yeah.
There's no real shot in the trailer. So, like, I mean, yeah, we went in not knowing at all.
Are you saying that Hollywood execs allowed something to not be shown and to be surprised in a theater?
Oh. I mean, I think because it was Spielberg is my guess.
That's probably true.
Honestly, my guess is I don't think any other other producer in Hollywood, maybe Lucas, but Lucas doesn't have the restraint to do that anyway.
That's amazing, though, that they did not advertise one of the creations. Like like Joe said, I could not even fathom this day and age teasing a movie like that. I mean, not just a teaser trailer, but to actually have a full trailer tease audiences and not give them anything.
And it was like, it's like a 2.5 minute trailer.
Yeah.
Originally I tried to just pull up TV spots. Cause honestly, like, you know, back then, unless you happened to go see a movie, you didn't see a trailer.
Sure.
Like that, you know, like that was, so it wasn't uncommon to see a movie without ever having seen a trailer.
Yeah, that's fantastic. No, I mean, I miss those days. I mean, because, you know, I, of course, don't seek out the trailers. But, you know, just by being on the internet, you're going to get screenshots. You're going to get people talking about stuff.
Sure.
The fact that they were able to hide it and reveal it in the theater, like, that's amazing to me. And I miss that type of surprise because that's how we used to go into movies. We, you know, it was a lot easier to avoid those details and not watch a trailer if you didn't want to. And so, you know, I try to recreate that the best I can, but I think when you sit,
it's impossible.
Yeah. When you sit down in the movie theater and you discover a movie and everything about it, I think it's such a neat way to watch movies. And, that's cool.
Yeah. Agreed. But yeah. So like, I think that tonal shift is even greater going in like that, especially because like at that point, Spielberg is fairly synonymous with family friendly entertainment. And on the few occasions that it's not, I mean, they really telegraphed that Poltergeist isn't a traditional Spielberg movie. So, you know, going in that it's a horror movie.
Poltergeist is weird because they don't reference Spielberg, right? Like that's they have Toby Hooper's name at the front of that movie, but we all know what happened, right? Like it's no secret that Toby Hooper was, kicked off that movie. But and Spielberg is there as a producer, but if you look at that poster or at least that trailer,
pulling it up,
it says it's a Toby Hooper film. And then Spielberg came in and took over. Like, and you could see the switch in that one too.
And I mean, he probably wouldn't have wanted to put his name on it just to not make his brand kind of diluted. Like, he didn't want to confuse his brand. Like, even if he did take over and do most of it, I just don't know that at the time that Spielberg, because like you said, he was synonymous with the family-friendly fare and the adventure stuff, and he probably didn't want to be known as horror director Steven Spielberg.
Or horror producer.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah, so this is you know, 1984. We've got, I think it's Zach Gilligan plays Billy in the small town of Knott Hill Valley. And he works at a bank, and his life is pretty, pretty normal. You know, like, he lives with his mom and dad, and he's got this Kate. Is her name Kate?
Phoebe Cates is Kate. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. You know, I don't know why, maybe it's that Mandela effect. I thought they were together in this movie, and they are not.
Oh no. You're like, thinking of the second one.
They are not
for sure.
Right. They're definitely together in the second one, but I thought they were boyfriend and girlfriend in this.
Just real quick, that Spielberg poster, or the Poltergeist poster, what you see is you see Carol Ann in front of a TV with her hands on it. I think the picture's technically in color, but it's very saturated to the point of practically black and white. At the top, above the TV, it says, "They're here." Below it, Poltergeist. Below that, "It knows what scares you." And then you get that standard kind of credit blurb that you see on posters, you know, outline who made it. And then it does say, it says Steven Spielberg presents. It's kind of small in here. I think it actually says a Steven Spielberg presents. I can't tell. Oh, hang on. Here's a bigger image of it. Yeah, it says, a Steven Spielberg production. But I will also say it is not screaming Spielberg at you.
No, not at all.
But I will also say, having remember when that movie came out in 82, like, I was very much aware that it was a Spielberg movie.
Hmm.
And you were.
And I would have been 12.
Okay.
Know? But I was very much aware that it was a Spielberg movie. I don't know how, but I was.
I've never seen it.
You've never seen Poltergeist?
No.
Oh, my. What are you doing with your life?
The first one's good. It's,
the first one's great.
I'm not a horror guy. I watched Halloween for the first time with you, Joe. Like,
it's
barely
a horror movie.
I don't know, but I
like, it is a horror movie, but...
I'm not a horror movie guy either, but it's a good movie.
Yeah, nice. Awesome. Yeah,
The 2 and 3 maybe not so much, but
yeah. No, I have to discover a lot of my stuff through you guys. I mean, I've enjoyed finding. I mean, like, I just watched Friday the 13th 1 through 8 recently.
So you didn't even finish the series.
Well, a little pandemic and childbirth thing happened, so it was, you know, just
you can hold him and watch the movie.
Just that little thing. Well, Ryan's not with me right now. We're watching them together, so.
You're letting Ryan watch the Friday the 13th series?
Hell yeah.
Okay. Bold move. Mm-hmm. Especially the later ones. Well, you know what? They're all pretty awful.
You know,
in the best
way. Do you think kids haven't seen this stuff in video games or any other? I mean, I basically, if there's nudity, I tell him to turn his head, you know, I cover his
eyes. So he just turns his head for 3/4 of those movies?
No, there's very, I mean, I bet you it's a few minutes total of, if even, it's very,
no, I know.
Yeah. So, but no, I mean, yeah, he really wanted to watch them. So I'm like, okay, well, we'll watch them together. I'm not going to let him watch Friday the 13th stuff by himself, but we watch them. And especially like later on, like the kills get pretty ridiculous, and it's it's,
you haven't gotten to the crazy ones yet.
Oh really?
Yeah.
That's funny.
I honestly don't let him watch part 9.
Really? What's that?
Yeah, I there's a lot of incest and rape.
Oh really?
Nine.
Oh, okay. Yeah, see, like, yes. That's different. Like, that's a completely different beast, but
and Jason's barely in it.
Okay. Ooh, I did not. Yeah. Well, thanks for the warning. Yeah, I had no idea.
10's fine. 10 is off the walls bonky. But anyway.
Is that Jason X?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. So Billy lives this very normal life in this sleepy little town, works at a bank, and it's just, you know, very boring for Billy. He's into comic books. There's a lot of cool shots of DC Comics kind of scattered around in his room. And his dad is, and I use the term inventor very loosely.
Yeah.
He invents things, but none of them work or they're ridiculous, like the automatic hammer, or things like that. So his dad goes into this, shop in there. Where do they say what city where that shop is? Is he in New York? Oh no, they are in New York.
They are in,
the
according to
this, New York.
Right, the shop is in New York's Chinatown.
Right, so he must have brought it back from New York.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So he tries to sell the old man something. The old man balks at it and says no. Then there's this kid who's not Short Round, which I thought was interesting. This is a Spielberg movie, and they have another character that looks almost identical.
And wearing a Yankees hat.
And wearing the same, almost the same outfit.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you saw that Raiders of the Lost Ark radio billboard. I mean, there's a lot of Spielberg Easter egg type things in here.
Yes, there are.
The movie theater that you see in Knott Hill Valley is showing, was it A Boy's Life and something? I forget the other title of the film, but both of those were working titles for E.T.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, one's E.T. and one's Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Is that what it is?
Okay. Yeah. I wondered too, because I'm like, what movies are those? And then I looked it up and they were working titles. So I'm like, okay, that's clever. There's a lot of that stuff, which is a neat little touch. It's almost like a Spielberg universe, you know? Like, it's like,
give me that movie.
Right? There's all these Spielberg. Well, I mean, that's what Ready Player One essentially.
Right.
Like, remember, Spielberg took away a lot of his own references because he thought it would be too meta. But the book was heavy with Spielberg references, so that's kind of what Ready Player One was supposed to be.
Give me in the next Indiana Jones is him trying to save the last Mogwai.
Oh, the last Indiana Jones is them trying to erase Crystal Skull from existence.
When people say I like that movie, it's like, oh, what? Okay, all right, well, you do you. So he sees Gizmo in this cage and he's enamored with Gizmo, and the old man won't sell it to him because he knows what Gizmo is and what sort of insanity could follow the Mogwai. So the dad leaves and the kid kind of chases him around the back, like we said, and he sells him behind the old man's back. And the guy brings him home. Dad brings him home. This movie, like I said, at this point is still very much a Spielberg movie where it's about family and about the sleepy town and, like, you know, discovering this creature. And Corey Feldman, a very young Corey Feldman, is in this movie as well.
This
speaking
kid
of Friday
is the 13th. The kid's in everything.
He was in everything. I forgot he was in this.
He was the go-to child actor back in the day, man.
Yeah.
And he was on a lot of TV stuff, too. Like, there was a TV version of The Bad News Bears, and he was on that. When they originally rebooted Leave It to Beaver, he played one of Beaver's kids. That dude was everywhere.
He was everywhere. Like, what was it? He was in one of the Friday the 13th movies, right?
He was Tommy Jarvis, yeah.
Right. Like,
he was in four or five, I think four.
Yeah, it's the final chapter.
Part four, not
is that
four movies.
Yeah. So
three different actors played that character.
Yeah. As I go back, though, and I watch these older movies and I keep seeing Corey Feldman pop up, it's crazy to realize how many roles he had. And then, you know, you have the voice stuff like The Fox and the Hound. You have Ninja Turtles. Mm-hmm. Like, he was
all over the place.
It's crazy to see how far he fell when he was everywhere early on.
You know, child actors in the 80s, man. Like, yeah. Anyway, we could probably count on one hand how many made it out. Okay.
right.
You know?
So they reproduce, like we said, and it seems
Corey
cute.
Corey Feldman knocks the water over, and we get a bunch of different ones, and they all look a little bit different, and they all have different attitudes. And of course, we know that Gizmo is timid and cute and kind of funny and almost puppy/baby-like. He is Howie Mandel.
Yeah.
Which is great. Like, I, again, totally forgot that he was the voice of Gizmo.
Did you ever watch Bobby's World?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it's the same voice.
It's the same voice. And so when you realize that, it clicks in your head. You're like, oh, okay, yeah.
There it is. So where is he in his career in 1983?
Doing Gremlins.
No, he's coming on. I mean, he has a major role on one of the most prestigious shows on television. He's on St. Elsewhere. And so he's on St. Elsewhere, and he's a very, very popular stand-up comic. In fact, part of the problem, I heard an interview with him recently on Mark Maron's podcast, and he was talking about how it was difficult for him to navigate St. Elsewhere because, one, it would draw people to his shows that knew him from this very kind of highbrow television show, and his act is not highbrow, and that he was also already a very successful stand-up comedian, and because St. Elsewhere had such a sprawling cast, he goes, by the time I paid my agent's commission, my manager's commission, and taxes. He's like, I really didn't make that much. And he's like, I made my real money from stand-up. And so, I mean, he was a very, very, at the time, if Howie Mandel went on tour, he would probably sell out a 3,000 or 4,000 seat theater.
Wow.
And there was a time when originally they wanted him to stop doing stand up and when he was on St. Elsewhere. And he was just like, you don't pay me enough. And he's like, I can't live on what you pay me. So he's like, if you want me to stop doing stand up, you either have to pay me more or you have to shut up and right. just let me do it. And eventually he said they never brought it up again. So, but right. anyway, but so Howie Mandel was definitely like, I mean, I don't know that I'd say he's certainly not an A-list actor, but he's a known commodity with a very legit fan base at this point in time.
Okay. Yeah. So, and we've got, our more gremlins, and Billy is just trying to keep the status quo. Like, he's trying to keep these things under wraps and it's not working. He takes one of them to go see, I guess it's his old high school science teacher.
Yeah.
I don't really know how they knew each other, but that's what I assumed it was. And the science teacher kind of has him locked up and he's trying to figure out what this creature is. This is going to lead to this poor man's downfall. it's poor guy.
Like his head is torn off with a syringe in his butt.
They never show you what happens. Which he gets pulled under the desk and you can't see
he's
what
dead
happens.
And his head is under a desk. I'm guessing there's a rated R cut
there's
of
no
what
head.
Happened to the head. Yeah.
yeah. So while Gizmo is just, you know, being like the good one, these other Mogwai turn off Billy's clock. So he feeds them after midnight. Like
they're like shaking. They're like convulsing in the drawer. They're so like he thinks they're hungry. You know, it's just so funny to see him like vibrating in the desk. And he's
right.
like, okay, I'll feed you. It's only 11:40 or whatever.
Right, we're good to go. So he feeds them, and that unfortunately is where this movie changes. is as soon as you see like the pods. So what happens is he feeds them after midnight, and because of that, that begins this metamorphosis into the green goopy gremlin.
Those look just like alien pods.
They did look very similar to alien pods.
Didn't they? Like, I mean, an alien was in the 70s, right?
Like, yeah, it's like 79, I think.
Yeah, so clearly, like, I mean, I don't know. That's pretty darn close.
It was pretty close. And then they are birthed. And this is where we get Stripe in part 2.
Yeah.
And all of the other gremlins, and what they do is they end up so it's interesting. It's a rule that I didn't even think about. So if they replicate as a Mogwai, they replicate Mogwais.
Right.
But if they replicate as a gremlin, replicate gremlins.
Yeah.
I didn't even process that until I watched
that's a
it
good
again.
Call. Like, yeah, the gremlin, the gross ones aren't having cute little fluffy fur balls.
No. So the gremlins take over this. They replicate themselves and they make more of them, and which is fun because it gives your characters in this movie fodder to just do gross things to them. Right. Yeah. Like Billy's mom throws one in a microwave and legitimate.
One's in a blender, right? Before that, he's like in the blender thing and she turns it on and he's spinning
maybe.
Around. Food processor, whatever that thing is.
I think it goes blender and then, and then
microwave.
Yeah.
So they, I mean, they are chopping up monsters. Like they're blowing them up. They're making them gross.
Did you read this? I know Tom did some research. Did you hear about that they originally wanted the execs wanted these played by monkeys?
Yeah.
Really?
They try. Okay. So at first he's like, Joe Dante's like, I do not want to do stop motion animation for this entire movie. And so they're like, we want to do puppets. And the execs are like, oh, that will be really expensive. Is like, let's put costumes on monkeys.
Yeah.
And so one of the monkeys started having a panic attack and freaking out when they put
a head on it. Right.
And he started throwing his feces, destroying things and going crazy. And then Joe Dante turns to the executive and he goes, so puppets then?
Yeah.
So I mean, anyway, so these were almost monkeys in suits.
Well, I'm glad they didn't do that.
Yeah. Did you also see that Spielberg was really close to hiring Tim Burton to direct this?
Yeah, after Frankenweenie, he was going to go to Tim Burton, but he hadn't proven himself on a feature, so he went with Joe Dante.
You know what? I can see that.
Totally.
Even the sets and even the wackiness of that, I can absolutely see Tim Burton being a part of this movie.
It would be a very different looking movie, but I think it could. I think it would still be a pretty good movie, especially this era of Tim Burton.
Yes. Yeah. And this movie was written by Chris Columbus on a spec script. So he only did this just to prove that he had what it took to write films. And Spielberg read it, and he said it was one of the most creative things that he had ever read, and he made the movie. So Columbus wasn't even trying to get this thing made, which is really interesting.
1984, you know, though, it probably was.
What's that? Like, I mean,
One of the more creative.
Oh yeah,
coming out. You know,
if Spielberg says it was, and that's why he made the movie, I'm guessing it was. Yes. But you know, Chris Columbus, of course, would go on to direct Home Alone and direct the first Harry Potter movies, and
which Home Alone is why he's not involved in Gremlins 2, is because they were filming simultaneously, and so they couldn't get him back.
Right, and what a shift! And we'll get into that in the second one, but interesting
in the best way.
Either way, it's like, it's interesting to think that, like, you had Chris Columbus writing this script, they make the movie, and then you get him to leave to do Home Alone, and then you get Gremlins 2. So we'll get into those differences and all that. But
two big wins. Two big wins. That's all I got to say.
It's always fascinating when you see these people that go on to be big deals working on things that, you know, when before their names, where you can look back and be like, boy, you really had a murderer's row at the time and you didn't know it.
Look at last week with Scooby-Doo.
Right. Well, yeah, I was going to say James Gunn, but then you have like Ron Howard doing the Corman stuff, like these directors that would become huge.
Terrence Malick writing, working on the screenplay for Dirty Harry. Like,
That's right.
Yeah.
There's a lot a lot of weird things like that. But we should also mention, before we move on though, real quick, like, so the special effects, like Rick Baker did the second movie, but he didn't do this one. So
I think, so this came out in 84. I think he was probably doing American Werewolf in London.
Oh, was he? Okay.
I think so.
I always presumed that this one was him, right? Cause the second one was, and I didn't realize that he had taken that over. Do you remember the guy's name that did these effects?
Says they were designed by Chris Wallace.
Chris Wallace, I believe. Yeah. So credit to him. Like, he did amazing work, and so much so that Rick Baker didn't even want to take over for the second one, you know, because he wanted to be original and everything. So, like, you know, you got a guy like Rick Baker praising these things. So they looked great.
Real quick, because we're, you know, talking about last week's Scooby Doo, and we were talking about the voices. Frank Welker is the voice of Stripe.
He is.
Yeah. Yeah. And suggested Howie Mandel. That's how Howie Mandel got the gig.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Good for him. So, and then to me, the movie really, it doesn't go all the way crazy until Phoebe Cates gives her speech.
The speech and that Spielberg wanted pulled from the movie.
Yeah.
When she gives that speech, that is your flip. That is your switch, is when all hell breaks loose. Cause she,
I don't think
this,
it's necessarily the switch. I just think it's really self-aware. Oh. Like, Joe Dante wanted it kept in there because he knew, like, it's a perfect representation of the movie, how it, you get that, like, sweet Spielberg type of story, and then it's horrifying what ends up happening to the dad, that he slips, breaks his neck, dies in the fireplace, and they light the fireplace. Like, it's
and
insane.
They can't figure out what the smell is.
Yeah.
And it's funny because the executives were like, is this supposed to be serious or funny?
Right.
And he's like, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. That's the whole movie.
Exactly.
But I mean, you have all these gremlins wreaking havoc and dying in blenders and microwaves. Like, I think this is just a perfect representation of the movie. But I mean, once the gremlins get going, like, they're pretty nuts.
It's nonstop. It's nonstop. So they get out. They actually go after the neighbor. I'm trying to think of that guy's name who plays the neighbor, who is
Dick Miller?
Always
Dick Miller.
Yes, thank you, Dick Miller. Yes.
Oh yeah.
Always in, great character actor.
Yeah.
And he's such a racist.
Oh, he's so racist.
Like, it didn't play quite that egregious back then. I mean, he played more as just a paranoid nut job, and now you're just like, oh, I know how this story ends in the real
he becomes
world.
President.
Yeah, like,
but like the scene. So the neighbor, the gal in, you know, the gremlins are just going all over the place. There's the gal in the automated wheelchair that gets launched out of a window.
Is that the one from the bank?
Yeah, it is.
No. Oh, it is?
It is. It is for sure. It's difficult to tell mm-hmm. because she has her wig off, and I was even commented on it watching
the movie.
Well,
I was confused when I watched it, but I'm like, I think that's the lady, the mean lady from the bank.
It is, yeah. And the reason I know that is because I know the actress. It's Polly Holiday, who, if you know anything about 70s sitcoms, she's one of the most iconic characters in 70s sitcoms, but she played Flo on Alice. So the gum chopping waitress who used to say "kiss my grits" all the mm-hmm. time,
yeah.
like that's her, and she has never looked anything like Flo. She only ever looked like Flo when they made her look like Flo, right? Like it's in the, and so whenever you see her in anything else, you're just like, who is that? And so when they showed her as the old lady going up the thing, I was like, oh, that's for sure
okay.
Polly Holiday. And but yeah, so she played Flo. Another interesting, just how things come full circle. She had a spinoff called Flo, and didn't do very well, and it got canceled after like just a few episodes. But the theme song for that show was sung and written by Hoyt Axton, who plays the inventor, Billy's father. So,
are you serious right now?
Yeah, yeah. And Hoyt Axton is also he's a famous musician and songwriter. And his best known song is he wrote "Joy to the World." So Jeremiah was a bullfrog. That's Hoyt Axton. So
that's crazy.
Yeah,
jeez. 6 degrees of Tom O'Keefe.
Yeah,
I was going to say 7 degrees of Joe Dante.
Yeah, it's also probably true. So these gremlins, I mean, Kate works at a bar, and these gremlins are just destroying this town. They're taking everybody out.
I really liked this humor beat. So, of course, this movie is very much a dark comedy with all these humans getting terrorized and the gremlins dying and they're killing people, and it's crazy. I really like how in the bar, the gremlins are just hanging out. They don't kill Kate. She was waiting on the gremlins.
Yes.
I just thought it was a really funny comedic beat. Like, they're terrorizing everybody.
Does her boss say we're going to close the bar? And then she's like, never mind, we'll just wait on them.
Yeah. It's just like, it's...
Apparently, this movie was really popular in foreign countries because they would dub in local jokes for the gremlins. So, like, they'd be singing, like, German drinking songs for when it aired in Germany or whatever. So they would insert local references and people ate it up. So
it was all improvised. So there was no script. So the people who did the voices just improvised for their country.
Yeah.
That's funny. And then so they're just taking, like, gremlins, there's so many of them that they can just blow them up. They can do whatever they want with them. The final showdown comes when Billy
they go to the movies to watch Snow White.
They do, which is a great callback in the next one.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. They just want to watch Snow White.
Would you ever see this today? You know what I mean? Like, an extended clip of Snow White plays.
Right. Oh yeah.
And you know what is this?
In a Warner Brothers
picture. Yeah.
It's so weird. Not until Who Framed Roger Rabbit have you seen such a crossover,
which was also instigated by Spielberg, right?
Yeah.
Like, would they do it for anyone else?
Yeah. No.
No. No. Hell no. So the final showdown comes with Billy and
real quick. It makes me wonder if the reason Spielberg could get it was because he was already working on Roger Rabbit. That was in production for a long time, and it came out
in 1984. Didn't that come out in 1989?
Well, I don't remember when it came, but still, I mean, that was a long time.
It was in production they tried to get that movie made for like over 10 years, I think.
It came out in 88, so it's only 4 years later.
Yeah.
You know,
I just bought that book.
Oh, really?
Oh, Who Killed Roger Rabbit?
Is it Who Killed Roger Rabbit?
I thought your book was called Who Killed Roger Rabbit.
Yeah, I think so.
It might be.
And then they softened it.
I found it on eBay, and I was like, yeah, I'll buy it for $10.
I should say on Disney Plus, there's a great
pop
culture.
Oh, it's so good.
If you're not watching Disney Plus, the original programming, there's some great stuff, especially for Disney fans.
Yeah, that prop culture show is amazing.
Prop culture, this dude goes around the country, and he goes and he collects movie memorabilia, and then he goes around, and they actually give him real props that were used in Disney movies. Like, he takes them out of the vault, and he flies around the country to the people that made them, and he discovers them.
He fixes the shrink ray? Like, he redoes the shrink ray from Honey, I Shrunk the Kids?
There's so many great great things in there. But watch the one on Who Framed Roger Rabbit. I recently watched that movie, and then I went and watched the prop culture, and man, it's fascinating.
When they show Christopher Lloyd the original outfit. Judge costume, oh, so good.
That is one of the scariest things in a movie as a kid.
It, without question.
Yeah,
without
those
question.
Red eyes, and when he turns daggers, into like the cartoon.
He talks like this.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it comes down to Billy and Gizmo versus Stripe in this department store. And
oh,
it's
because,
great.
Well, they blow up the movie theater. They open a gas line or whatever, and they're all trapped, and they're watching Snow White, and they end up
blowing the place up. They all get blown up.
And you think, like, oh, it's over. They killed them all. But Stripe was in the department store, and I love that he walks out holding, like, movie candy, like he was going to raid it to bring it over to the movie theater. And he's like, oh crap.
Oh, no.
Drops it
all
and runs.
All my buddies are dead.
Drops it and runs back in the store.
Yeah.
And I like how there's, like, in the department store, there's all these Looney Tunes stuffed animals, and
there's
so
all
many
kinds of DC and Warner Brothers related stuff out there. So Stripe realizes that he needs to make more. If he wants to win this, he needs to make more. So he jumps into the fountain, and Billy, who has been somehow beaten up and destroyed by one gremlin, he's kind of a wimp.
The gremlin had a chainsaw and was attacking him with it. Like,
he also had a baseball. He's a gremlin, Kevin. He comes up to your knee.
With a chainsaw.
He's a chainsaw, Joe. That's not
he
exactly.
He also had a bat. And judging by the chain that was on that chainsaw that didn't cut immediately through that bat.
It's an aluminum bat. He has an aluminum bat.
That's
yeah. And the gremlin doesn't have that much weight. You know, when you use a chainsaw, you put your weight into it to cut. He's a
but still.
Joe, have you ever fought a gremlin holding a chainsaw?
The government said I cannot speak of that, so I can either confirm or deny.
Okay, carry on.
I've been listening to this thing called Winds of Change, this podcast. Yeah. Have you listened to this?
I've heard of it.
It's about the Scorpion song and how it's like CIA propaganda. Yeah. So this guy tried to get information on it, and the government was like, we can either confirm or deny the Scorpions were involved with any CIA operation ever. And the guy's like, that's it? And they're like, that's it. Okie dokie. Very good.
I love the practical effects in this movie, and I think they look
they're so good.
I think they all look amazing. I'm so glad. I couldn't imagine it was CG and all that stuff. But this is one of my very favorite ones, the melting in the fountain.
Yeah.
I think that special effect's incredible.
Like Tom said, it was supposed to be Billy, but here it's Gizmo stepping up to the plate and pulls it daylight now, and he pulls the blinds to open, and of course, Stripe is engulfed in sunlight. And at the same time, he's in the water. So it's like double goop.
Yeah.
So he just
starts
melting.
It looks so good the way he melts away. And then it's like his skull. And then that melts away.
That was a great little like slasher flick ending his skeleton pops up out of the.
Yeah. Jumps up and then it melts.
But then the effect that I thought was the most badass is like when the gremlin goop is on the floor.
Yeah.
It's like bubbling.
Yeah.
I just thought that was a great effect.
It looks great. I miss practical effects like this. CG, we said it before, we'll say it and continue to say it, just doesn't carry the weight. And when you see these kind of practical effects, it's so much more, even though you know they're not real, it's clearly a movie and they're clearly puppets, but they hold more of a threat than any CG creature, you know, would ever hold. And it's great to watch these movies because of the time and the money they put into creating these creatures.
When we get to the gremlin bat fight in the second one, mm-hmm. like that would have been way better had it been a real gremlin.
right.
The entire time. So 1984's Gremlins. If you haven't seen it,
there's a dog chasing a deer in my neighbor's yard. We have new neighbors, and this dog is going after a deer, chasing it around in circles.
Go get it, buddy.
That's horrible.
Did he get it?
I don't know. It's behind trees, but I literally saw a dog run out and a deer running in circles away from a dog.
She was like, oh, no, oh, no. I made him. This dog hasn't been here before.
Oh, God. Okay. Sorry.
I just find it hard to believe that nobody has seen this movie or has not seen this movie. I feel like this is one of those ones that if you're an 80s kid, this is one of the ones that like it was a staple for us.
Mm-hmm.
But if you haven't seen it or you want to introduce your kids to it, I cannot recommend it enough. Just be warned, it is probably would be rated closer to PG-13, closer to the 13 part.
PG-13 exists because of this movie and Temple of Doom.
Yeah.
So this is absolutely,
I think,
with
Poltergeist
a modern
is PG as well.
Yeah, because my Poltergeist is 2 years earlier. The rating didn't even exist yet.
Right. The MPAA is like, Steven, what are you doing?
Yeah.
We can't show this.
Well, they were basically like, you know, he was going to have to start making stuff R, and then he proposed, like, okay, let's put something in between, because I can't sell tickets with R.
Yeah. And how much juice do you have where you're like, how about we just make up a new rating for me?
Where the MPA is like, yeah, we'll listen to you.
Okay.
You want to make up another rating? We can do that.
Yeah. And I always think it's interesting, real quick before we wrap up, just to kind of show you where pop culture was at the time, here are the top 10 movies from 1984. It's just kind of interesting historical context. So I'll start at number 10 is Splash, starring Tom Hanks and
Daryl Hammond.
There we go.
Not Daryl Hammond.
Daryl Hammond.
No, Daryl Hannah.
There we go. Directed by Ron Howard, right? Star Trek III, The Search for Spock. Romancing the Stone, which if you haven't seen, is a lot of fun. Footloose.
All right.
Police Academy, the first one.
Don't tell Spath.
Oh, Michael Winslow was doing voices in this movie, too.
Yeah, totally. It also explains why you get so many of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
The first one was the sixth highest grossing movie of 1984. Coming in at number 5, The Karate Kid. Coming in at number 4, Gremlins.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, and also to show you where movies were back then, Gremlins is the first movie on this list to earn over $100 million.
Man, that's
so
crazy.
Yeah. And so number 3, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. Again, for perspective, Gremlins made 153, Indiana Jones made 179. So
that's a, I mean I know what number 1 is. That's a murderer's row of movies.
I bet you don't know what number 1 is.
I thought it was Ghostbusters.
Coming in at number 2, Ghostbusters.
Oh.
With unadjusted for inflation, $229 million.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah. And then coming in at number 1, again, I just think this is great historical perspective, right, to show you what was going on in pop culture. Coming in number 1 in 1984 with $234 million, Beverly Hills Cop.
Oh, that makes sense.
Wow.
that totally makes sense.
And I need a PG-13, Mr. Spielberg. It's rated R.
Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, that's fair. It's funny that the movie that Eddie Murphy was supposed to be in comes at number 2, and then the one that he is the star, the lead in, comes in number 1.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's back before The Hangover rebooted it. It's like, you know, rated R comedies were a huge deal, and, you know, that's what it would take as a huge comedian like that to bring in that kind of box office.
To just they've gone away.
That was the best part about having divorced parents is you could talk your dad into taking you to R-rated movies.
Yeah.
So that's how I saw Beverly Hills Cop. I'd have been 13 when Beverly Hills Cop came out, so I couldn't see that movie, and so I've got my dad to take me.
That's hilarious.
Well, we got to wrap this up because I have to go videotape this dog chasing this deer. I've never seen anything like this before.
Well, it's good to have priorities. So, okay, well, that's it for this one. Let's go around the table and everyone can say where to find them.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
And this is Tom. Follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. Find the show online, Facebook.com/Real Spoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group. And, of course, if you could be so kind as to check out our Patreon, Patreon.com/Real Spoilers. So that's it for this one. Coming up on the next one, we will enter into the realm of misbegotten sequels with
Gremlins. I guess we should say the end of this movie is the old man comes back and takes
the gremlin.
Takes him with him. And that's how it ends. And you're just like, okay.
So, yeah, you're not ready for this, Billy.
Yeah. So anyway, Gremlins 2, the next batch is what will come up on the next one. Until then, Arnold is drawn, quartered, and multiplies.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.